There we go. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome to the Miscellaneous and Brown Studios a very special guest, Constantine Anthony, running for LA County Supervisor, but he's the former mayor of Burbank. And we got to meet, shout out to my agent, Mark Scroggs, through LB Talent. I met through a Zoom, and this cat has such an interesting story, guys. And my goal with this podcast is to bring people that will inspire you to be live your better selves, to become a part of your community, and to, you know, just do better and be good. So I'm bringing you another example of an actor turned elected politician. Ladies and gentlemen, Constantine Anthony, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. It was a good Zoom. It was a good meet, and you had some very interesting and hard-hitting questions. Viewers at home, he put me to the test, and you definitely know how to hold your elected officials accountable. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate that too. That means a lot. I mean, I'll say this. One, we talked about it a little bit before the pod, just to kind of do like a pre-interview. But this is one of my goals, is to, you know, I grew up watching The Daily Show. We both did. We both watched Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and you know, all these correspondents. Shout out to my homie Dan Bacadell from Chicago, who is also a correspondent, who I came up with on Second City. But like, But they made politics and getting involved in your community fun and funny and found the humor in it. And, you know, we even had that kind of rapport when we were talking at the, you know, during that Zoom with the agent when we first met. We already kind of had a little bit of a rapport.
Yeah.
Just because I think because we talked about theater and we talked about acting. But we also talked about how you turned from an actor to almost an actor advocate, because like the strike almost, it kind of like...
Yeah, that was an interesting time. So when I met Eric on the Zoom, we were talking about the issues facing not just actors, but, you know, the industry in and around Burbank and LA County. But a lot of the stuff we were talking about is replicated in almost every single workplace across this country. You know, the lack of union representation, the lack of good wages and benefits, corporations being merged into bigger and bigger corporations, all of these multinational conglomerates and billionaires running basically the entire country, and how we as individuals fight back. Last year, in 2023, I spent the year as the mayor of the city of Burbank. For those of you who don't know, it's a very small city, 105,000 people, just north of LA. And it has 5 city council members. But every year, the city council takes turns and they appoint one of the council members to be mayor for the year. And it's basically a figurehead position. You know, you cut the ribbons, you gavel in the meetings, you make announcements if there's some pomp and circumstance. Most of the time, and, you know, throughout the whole history of the city, the mayor really doesn't have any job other than simply being the focal point of the city and the person who is, you know, the point person for the rest of the council. But last year, the city of Burbank, which has the moniker Media Capital of the World.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, there are more movies and television shows and productions being shot in Burbank per capita than anywhere else on the planet.
Including Miscellaneous and Brown, the 1-2 Productions, guys. It's another one.
You're right here in Burbank. That's right. We are in Burbank currently. Most people think movies are made in Hollywood, and in fact, Hollywood is just a tourist trap. It's fun. Go ahead and visit. But the actual films and the actual television productions are done here in Burbank, and we make all of the media, video games and advertising and anything on the internet. I mean, it's all right here in our backyard.
Like when She-Hulk busted the MCU and she jumped out of the MCU at the end of the series and the series finale, she jumped and she was in Burbank, y'all.
That's right.
Where she was.
That's right.
That's where She-Hulk was.
That's so funny. It's true. I watched that. I'm like, hey, I know that street.
I know. I was like, hold on. I've been there. She-Hulk walked where I walked.
Yeah, that's my hood. I'm in She-Hulk's hood. And so for 191 days, we had a handful of billionaires, CEOs of these multinational conglomerates, who were telling the studios to hold out, to not pay the actors, not pay the writers. They were quoted as saying, well, we'll wait for them to start losing their houses and then they'll be complicit and they'll take the deal that's given to them.
That was literally a quote, guys.
That is a direct quote. A direct quote from one of the CEOs of the studios. And so...
That's some robber baron type stuff.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Starve them out.
Yep. You know, Gilded Age kind of nonsense. Hey, it's the Roaring Twenties again, right?
It kind of is. It kind of cycles. Isn't it the history kind of cycles? It's a trip. Because people forget, you know, what labor unions did for us in the 20s and 30s and 40s. And even, you know, in my own personal case with Filipinos, people don't understand that there have been Filipinos in California since the 30s and 40s mm-hmm. working in the fields. And that's a lot of the stories that I told in theater with those, like the Manong stories, are part of the reason why I'm so adamant about being part of, you know, trying to advocate to people like you, progressive politicians who are willing to kind of pull us into the future mm-hmm. rather than, you know, keep us either stagnant or pull us back into the past and make us great again or whatever that means.
Right. And unfortunately, the status quo was not working. And last year, when the strikes happened, I was the sitting mayor. I was a SAG-AFTRA member. I'd been a member since 2006. And, you know, I pay my dues every year. I was there on the 07 strike lines. And I had to make a decision. Was I going to remain neutral and simply be the figurehead of the city
right.
that has both actors and writers and people who work in production as the voters?
The people who live up top on the hills, right?
Yeah, but also, you know, the studios are the number one industry in the city.
That's not just actors and writers and everybody. That's the people who are at the gates, the parking attendants, the people who work in the cafeterias, everybody.
Yeah, groundskeepers, the people who work across the street, the dry cleaners mm-hmm. and feed everybody, you know. All of that
restaurant down the block that everybody goes to for lunch that's not getting the business that they were getting before.
So all of that taken into consideration, I knew I had to step up and step outside of the typical duties of a mayor, a rotating figurehead position. I decided that it was important for me to go above and beyond what typically is required of the head of the city. And so on the very first day of the writer's strike, I was out there on the strike lines with my signs and talking to people and marching and shouting and protesting. And I stayed out there for 191 days. I was there on the very last day as well of the SAG-AFTRA strike. And people all the time, they asked me, they said, you're the mayor of the city. You run an economic powerhouse of a neighborhood here. Aren't you afraid of pissing off the studios? Aren't you afraid of going against your bread and butter? And I said, no, I'm not afraid of that. I'm not, because I was elected by the people. The folks who run the studios, they don't live in Burbank. They can't vote for me.
Right.
And they sure as hell didn't donate to my campaign, I'll tell you that much. So the studios didn't put me in office.
Right.
The people who work there, the people who live in Burbank, who I knocked on doors and I talked to and I canvassed for, and when they would open up, they would say, hey, what are you doing here? I say, look, I'm running to be your city council member. I'm a SAG-AFTRA member. I understand the studio system. I know the struggle. I've worked in every single one of these lots. Please, please vote for me.
Yeah.
I have worked in every single soundstage in Burbank.
Nice.
Okay, I've been doing this 20 years.
That's a cool credit.
Yeah. And so that's who supported me, and those are the people that voted for me.
Right on.
So what am I going to do? Abandon them because, oh, well, you know, the corporate overlords say I can't do it. Nah, man, forget that.
Well, no, and you know what? I feel like, because when we talked in the Zoom, we talked about theater and live theater and how, you know, we both kind of came up in that same kind of grind. Because when you do that, when you come from like that grassroots community, mm-hmm. it's hard to forget that grassroots because you wouldn't yeah. be who you are without those people.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many shows I've did for free.
For free.
All the labor on our own, you know, trying to get your friends to show up. Please come to my show.
How many times?
Please pay $5 at the door.
How many times I was so excited about a project and I told my parents and the only question they had was, how much are you getting paid? And I'd be like, well, I'm working at a restaurant.
look, it's a festival. You don't understand the festival circuit.
You don't understand. I'm in a comedy festival, Mom. You don't even understand how these people...
If I make it to the final night, but, I have an opportunity to make it to the grand entrance.
And then I might win some money. It's great. it's a trip. And it's hard to explain to people who are outside of the industry the struggle, but also it's even hard to celebrate with people who yeah. can't really get why you're so excited about a certain, like,
yeah.
I gotta say, like, when I got the text that you said you were coming over, I was like, oh man, this is so cool. I feel like Brown John Stewart. This is awesome. No, but I want to hear what made you flip that switch. What made you turn from a working actor for 20 years who's worked on every lot in Burbank
right.
to saying, you know what, I want to run for office and I want to go on city council and then I want to take the mantle of mayor. What made you take that leap and make that decision?
That's an easy answer. Donald Trump.
Mm.
Donald Trump. I had no plans to be a politician. This is ridiculous. This job is so silly.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
You know, I've done comedy.
He's the reason for this podcast. He's the reason I started this, because Phil Amps for Biden had approached me in 2020 because it was like 29% of Filipinos were voting for Trump and they were like, can you be like a, and they had me at Jon Stewart because they were like, can you be like Jon Stewart and you like make jokes about Donald Trump, but do it for catered towards Filipino Americans. And I was like, Are you sure you got the right Filipino comedian? You don't want Joe Coy to do this, you know, whatever. But I took it up and I was like, oh my God, this is great. And I took, you know, the responsibility of writing jokes. You know, I covered the debates. I covered the fly on Pence's head. I covered all the jokes, you know, and everything. And it was good practice for me. But then this election, I kind of thought, you know, I got to do something more.
Yeah.
Because all politics really is local. Tip O'Neill.
Right? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And like you said, Donald Trump, it's a different game, man. Yeah. It's a different... This whole movement, this MAGA movement is just different. Like, they deny that they lost the election right. and then they deny... I mean, even right. the lady who just ran for the Republican head of Michigan, they have two heads of Republican in Michigan because the lady's denying that she lost the election.
Right, right. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's childish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I admire you so much that you took it upon yourself to say, you know what, heck with this, I'm going to run for office. Because I understand where as an American, you could see our democracy slipping away.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you, it's not different. We've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it 70 years ago. We saw it cropping up across the globe in banana republics and authoritarian dictatorships.
Donald Trump's dad was a part of one of the Nazi rallies in New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's like best buddies with Putin. I mean, you know, all of this is...
I thought we learned in Rocky IV that Russians are bad. I mean, let's be real. Come on. We knew that from Rocky IV. I learned that shit in
right,
the movie.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah, even Ivan Drago learned that.
Oh, let's boy. Be real, guys.
Yeah.
If you don't know, watch Rocky IV again and get you some patriotism back because yeah. Russians are not our friends.
Yeah. And then go watch Creed 2 and realize that we haven't learned anything.
Oh my gosh. It's true.
And it's all cyclical.
And Jonathan Majors hadn't learned anything either because he's still running away from that white lady in New York. Know. Oh my gosh. Oh, anyway, boy. We digress. Yeah. No, but...
But also RIP, Carl Weathers.
Oh, yes.
Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed and the manliest handshake you will ever see from Predator. Remember that
movie? Yeah.
Oh, that was my favorite when he's like,
And yeah. And they like arm wrestled for a minute.
It's a meme.
Oh.
It's a meme.
It's the best. Shout out to Carl Weathers. And you know, a long career like we both want to have as actors. You know, like he was in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I'm right, just last, you know, season two. So that's for me, all I hope for as an actor is to have a longevity in this game.
And he gave back to his community too. Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, another goal of mine, you know, is to give back. Like that first season of Miscellaneous and Brown, you know, started and inspired this one because I'm trying to, you know, get people more involved. But also, I want people to know, you know, because some people need hand-holding. We don't have civics classes the way, you know, like I know I grew up with civics classes. I couldn't graduate from eighth grade unless I passed the Constitution test.
Right, but we had a huge change over the last 20 years, ever since W. Bush came in.
Left all of them behind.
Yep, we left all the children behind.
We left them all behind.
We focus on testing and we focus on placement and how well the schools are doing. We don't actually teach the kid based on what the kid's needs are. So, yeah, we have a huge loss of that education. Gen Z is trying to catch up. They are hungry for this political knowledge. But for me, like, you know, even referencing what Carl Weathers came up with, he came up through the ranks. And so that's why he gave back to the community. So for me, looking at my history, you know, struggling as an actor, starving actor is a trope at this point. You know, I've been homeless a couple of times.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you just don't make that kind of money. I've lived on the street. I've lived on people's couches. I lived in my car. And so in 2016, when this fool won his election, I decided to a career change. I'm like, oh my God, I've been telling jokes and writing comedy and, you know, putting nonsense up on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
Why don't I actually run on the issues that I've been talking about? Because I was doing that, you know, progressive politics comedy stuff.
Right.
You know, I love Jon Stewart, and I love that whole Daily Show vibe of like, okay, if you can make fun of the authoritarians and the fascists, then maybe you can start to get people on board with progressive politics, with taking care of folks and understanding that healthcare is a human right, housing is a human right, you know, trans people are real and they exist, and maybe we shouldn't disparage
them. Maybe you should just mind your business.
Yeah.
I mean, just let's be real.
Just deal with what's in your own pants.
Exactly. You ain't got to worry about nobody else.
Yeah.
That's always been my philosophy. Yeah. I mean, like these libertarians and all these, you know, conservatives, they talk about individualism and pull you up by your own bootstraps, but you won't let a person be who they want to be as an individual. You want them to be an individual in the way you regard an individual in your rule book.
Right.
Which never really.
Oh, and forget if you have a uterus. Oh, you need to be regulated to hell. They'll regulate a uterus more than they will a firearm. So, you know.
I mean, you said it. I mean, I have two daughters. And, you know, when that happened, when that dropped and they reversed Roe versus Wade, I was like, yo, this is serious.
Yeah.
They're out to get it all back. Like they were mad in 1960 and they got mad about the Voting Rights Act and all the civil rights bills and all these things. And they want to take it all back.
Yeah.
And it's really scary because those times were very, very tumultuous, especially for people of color. Mm-hmm. And yes, my kids are half white and they're half Filipino, but they're half Filipino shows. So I'm scared every day for my kids when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm also scared for my kids because there was something else I learned on our talk was that Burbank is second in the country per capita in gun stores.
That's right.
And that really, it blew my mind, but it also scared the hell out of me, to be honest, because I'll only share this with you, you know, very quickly. There was a scare for the LA school districts, and it was like a bomb scare or some kind of like something was a threat, and they all the LAPD was out in the school.
This was right after COVID, right?
I believe so. And the kids were coming back to school, and there was like a threat that somebody was going to come shoot up the school or blow up the school. And I dropped my kid off. She was at the time like second grade, and I dropped my kid off, and I hugged her, and then I saw the cop car on the corner, and I tears started coming down my eyes because I was so afraid of what might happen to my kid. And And then when you throw in the fact that now we live in a place where guns are so accessible, we're like the reverse of Chicago. Because I grew up in Chicago, mm-hmm. and in Chicago, there's all the gun laws that regulate. You can't have handguns. You can't have all this. You can't have all the different regulations on guns. But then you got Iowa, Wisconsin, and Tennessee, and Michigan, and Indiana on the border. So all you got to do is drive across the border and buy whatever guns you want.
Right.
And
Burbank's the reverse of that.
Exactly.
We're surrounded on all sides by cities that have strict gun control ordinances, and Burbank historically has never had any.
And I feel like I've met a lot of people in Burbank now. I've lived here now 10 years, and I feel like not a lot of people know. Like, they'll see Big Gun World on Magnolia, mm-hmm. and they may see Little Gun World on Magnolia down the street, you know, on the other one. They're like two big gun worlds. But the other ones are very less. They're different, and there's 17 of them.
Right.
And it, like you said, who are we second to per capita?
It's a small town in Florida.
Florida, y'all. Florida.
Yeah.
Only Florida beats us, guys.
That's not who you want
to
be
second to.
That
is not who you want to be second to in as far as gun ownership and gun stores, a county in Florida. Oh, my goodness.
I will tell you, people do know. People in the city know. And I know they know because when I ran for office, that's what people talked about.
Good.
They said, what are you going to do about the gun stores?
Right.
And so I put it in my platform and I campaigned on it.
Yeah.
And in my first term, I put forth a proposal to regulate the stores.
Mm-hmm.
I thankfully was able to get the other council members on board and our other elected officials, and they agreed with me that we needed to do something about it. And so a year ago, we passed the first ever gun control ordinance in the city of Burbank.
Amen. All good.
We are not done. We are fine-tuning it. We are adding language to it. We are using every single legal means available to us that is not in violation of any of the Supreme Court rulings on the Second Amendment, but things that are defensible in court, that have been ruled on, that are allowable, so that we can reduce the total number of gun stores, limit where they can sell, what they can sell. Possibly even tax the sales themselves so that money can be used for education in the schools for kids growing up who don't really know about gun safety, or if their parents do have a firearm, how to talk to their parents about safe storage and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we're doing it. We're moving forward. People know about it. We have a lot of catching up to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's the first ever ordinance. The city is, you know, 111 years old. And for 110 years, we had zero laws, zero regulation. It was literally the Wild West.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why so many federal firearm license dealers came to Burbank, because they didn't have to deal with anything. No permits, no licensing. They just register their business like they would, a cupcake store.
Mm.
And actually, less regulations, because if you sell food, you have to
deal with the health regulations.
Exactly.
For sure.
So less regulations than selling cupcakes. And we changed that. So
awesome.
I got into office and I made that a priority, and we got it done. And we're still not done. We're still moving forward with that.
Okay. So. Well, now I'm going to ask you this, because, you know, I'm going to go with this, because, I mean, I also host another podcast called The Canacuyas, where we advocate for cannabis rights and for medicinal rights of cannabis.
Oh, me talking about cupcakes reminded you of
it? Yeah, a little bit. You know, I have some of the munchies, a little bit. I'm not going to lie. No, but I cannabis really is my medicine. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it is medicine.
And in a lot of places, it's regarded as medicine. Mm-hmm. And here in California, it's regarded as medicine, but not in Burbank.
No, we do not have any cannabis sales.
So we have the most guns besides Florida.
The most guns.
Gun stores besides Florida, but we ain't got no cannabis shops in the middle of California. And we were talking about trying to get tax revenue for education, but no cannabis stores.
Yeah, so
please explain the logic to me, please.
You're right. I ran on that issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe next month, we are coming back with a report to the city council about all of the proposed or possible taxes, allowances, and regulations surrounding having a, you know, a cannabis ordinance in Burbank to allow cannabis retail. We're going to talk about on-site consumption, like the cannabis lounges.
And maybe even maybe a cannabis comedy club that I would very much like to own. No, that, I mean, that. I mean, being real, as being a cannabis advocate and being a comedian, and I don't want to drink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't want to go to a club and have a shot of tequila or a shot of vodka. I mean, I'll have those on occasion, for sure. I'm not opposed to it. But at the same time, I would much rather, you know, take my medicine before a set, rather than, you know, doing. And so, yeah, I would love for that. I would love for that to be a, and then to be able to, I mean, that's a goal of mine, a dream of mine, is to is to have one of those, maybe even own an establishment where I can give people an opportunity to go on stage and do their thing and you know.
Yeah, that'd be great. And and what most people don't even realize is, you know, Burbank borders North Hollywood, which if you go to the border, you drive 5 minutes, go to the border of Burbank and North Hollywood, and all along the border, there's like half a dozen cannabis stores.
And if you go on Friday, you get 50% off, especially if you're the first, if it's the first time.
Because they're right there on the border. They're like, hey, Burbank, come across the street.
It's again the reverse, right? It's the reverse.
Yeah.
Like they want to regulate cannabis in Burbank, but at the end of the day, all they have to do is drive across the border. To try and regulate it, instead of regulating it, like,
just allow it and have the permits and get the sales tax and make people happy. You know, it's
and also, you know, I mean, I made the joke and I'm going to keep making the joke until it's not the case. I mean, when I'm stressed out, I got 17 gun stores around me and not a one. I got to drive to North Hollywood to get my cannabis to chill me out.
You know? You're right. Yeah, that shouldn't be that way.
It shouldn't be that way.
But we're working on it.
I appreciate it.
And like you said, all politics is local. You know, guns, marijuana, these are huge national issues.
And these are things that affect you. If you're listening, if you like marijuana, these are things that affect you.
Yeah, if you're worried about dropping your kids off at school, about a school shooting, this affects you.
Right.
But these local ordinances, these local city council races, these local school board races, like most people, I have friends, I was a comedian for 20 years. I've traveled across the country, you know, Philly, New York, Chicago, Portland, Seattle. Most of my friends across the country, when I ask them, I do this thing on my birthday every year. I do my Facebook, my Instagram. I say, hey, for my birthday this year, put in the chat or reply in the comments the name of your mayor. Most people had to look it up.
Yep. They had to Google it.
They had to Google it.
Yep.
Let alone their local city council member or school board member or water district appointee or, you know, community college trustee.
And your kids talking about your books getting banned at the school and you're like wondering what the hell. I thought I lived in a cool neighborhood or, you know, progressive
neighborhood. I voted for Joe Biden. Why are they banning books?
What are you talking about? Well, that's why, because all the politics is local. And that's why I wanted to have you on this podcast, on this podcast, because you have to, people understand, they only pay attention every 4 years, right? And now we're almost, we don't even want our choice, right? We're kind of like, oh my God, we got these two old dudes. But at the end of the day, it's not politics that affects you personally and actually are the people like you, the people that are running for office in your local district that actually walk up to your door and shake your hand and talk to you. Like, I'll share, when Nick Schultz was the first guy to ever do that for me, he was running for city council.
Yeah.
And he knocked on my door during the election in 2020. And he was like, can I put my yard sign up at your house? I'm like, bro, you got my vote. Because I've never, because I grew up, my parents were at Barack Obama's first fundraiser when he was running for state senator.
Oh, wow.
And my dad will always tell.
That's 20 years ago.
Yeah. My dad, well, because my mom was the director of medical services for this Chicago Board of Ed. Mm-hmm. And so she was working hand in hand with Michelle doing, listen, me talking about Michelle, but she was working with Michelle.
Because, listeners, he's talking about Michelle Obama,
right?
In case you didn't get that name drop.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm not name dropping for the sake of name, but I mean, this is where I came from. Like, I've always been a Democrat. I've always been in support of these things. And when Barack Obama got elected, I was ignited. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, he made it possible. Like, yes, we can. You know, like, it really made it like, oh, I am part of this country. I am, you know, we can be part of this country. And it's when it ignited me to always make sure to be poignant about my comedy and always be sure to, like, I mean, it's always been my goal because, you know, John Stewart and Eddie Murphy, those are the two guys. If I could be a merge of those two guys, I kind of almost look like a merge of those two guys anyway. So, you know,
that's funny.
But that's my goal with my comedy. And I think that, you know, having people on like you in my second episode, I mean, your story is amazing, bro. And I love that you were ignited by Trump because I feel like a lot of people can empathize with that.
Yeah. There are a number of people, when I go into political spaces, who had never done anything political until 2016. Mm-hmm. We call ourselves the class of 2016.
Mm.
It's like a thing.
Yeah.
And there's a whole group of us all across the country. That were radicalized and just enthusiastically jumping into fighting back.
Yeah.
It led to, you know, the resistance and the Indivisibles and all of those organizations, the swing lefts and all of that. And we did some really great work. Nick Schultz ran at the same time as me.
Current mayor of Burbank.
The current mayor. He was my vice mayor last year. He's the current mayor now. And we ran together in 2020. A lot of people put us together on a slate. There were two seats available. We both won a seat, and together we changed the shape of this city. In 2 years, that election, me and him, and then the following 2 years, we flipped every single seat on the city council.
That's awesome.
When Nick and I won, nobody could remember the last time two seats had been flipped. Normally, what happens in Burbank, and it's a very old conservative town,
mm-hmm.
you get incumbents after incumbents after incumbents win re-election. Then every so often, an incumbent will retire. Or every so often, an incumbent will make a mistake and screw up, and they'll vote him out. And so, normally, every election cycle, the incumbents win, or maybe one new person comes in. When Nick and I won in 2020, it was two new council members. People were like, whoa! This is, wow, it's never happened before.
And then you flip.
And then 2 years later, we got three new council members.
That's
so
awesome.
Like,
that's awesome, man.
We
but
did
that's,
some
but
great
that's
work.
How you make change in your local community.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can do it.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, it's a perfect transition to talking about what's going to happen next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And March 5th, it's your big day.
March 5th is a big day.
But, you know, you're running for, you know, LA County Supervisor.
That's right.
Number 5. Right?
Yeah.
County
District
number 5.
District 5. If you're in Burbank, if you're in Glendale, if you're in Pasadena, North Hollywood, Studio City, Valley Village, you'll see me on the ballot. It's the next step up. You know, I'm at the city council level now. I'm trying to go up one level to county. Nick Schultz, by the way, is running for state assembly, so he's skipping. He's going up two levels.
And you know what? Just shout out to Nick Schultz because he's going to be on this podcast too. He's already said that he would.
Yeah.
So we're going to hold him to it.
Yeah.
We're going to hold him to it. No, but
well, I'll say his big race is going to be in November because the top two in his race go on to November.
But he's on the ballot for the 5th.
He's on the ballot for the 5th. We're confident he'll make top two.
Okay.
So definitely vote for Nick Schultz, and then you'll see his race all the way to November. But Tuesday, March 5th, that's my big day. County does not have an automatic top two. So it's whoever gets over 50%. That's it.
So tell me, what's the difference between you and your opponents?
Oh, boy.
I love it. Because
how much time you got?
Well, no, because how much time do you want? Because people don't understand. You know, like, I'll say for myself, who is a studied political science person, you know. It's still hard for me to decipher when there's 20 names there or 15 names on a ballot. And it's hard to decipher. So, yeah, I would love for you to break down, at least in your category. And if not, we can go into even some of the other categories that you think people, if they want to vote in a progressive way in our county, let's do it. You know.
Well, first thing first, I will say this. If you are a voter anywhere in this country, ignore the mailers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Burbank, you have noticed that you get about 3 to 4 mailers every single day. The mailbox is filled to the brim with wasted paper of people trying to buy your votes, just sending you anything.
And it's just, It's so wasteful. It's so wasteful.
Oh my God. Forests and forests of trees have been destroyed.
The postman and the people driving this little right. piece of paper to stick in your... No, it's yeah. just wasteful.
Everyone I know, as soon as they see it, they just throw in the trash.
Guys, it's not 1996. So we don't do postcards anymore.
Right. And here's the worst part about these mailers. Everybody does them because it's a one-way message. There's no law.
And it's also subliminal. Because, I read that name. Okay, maybe I'll remember that name and check the box.
Yep, that's right. They're just trying to get name brand recognition out there. But there's no law that says you have to tell the truth on any of these mailers. And nobody ever does. If you actually tell the truth, you're wasting your time. Because you literally have a blank slate. You can create any image you want, any text that you want. And you get to send it to a voter. And they're not able to send anything back to you. There's no return address. Mm-mm. It's not like they can say, I had a question about this. They don't do it.
No.
It's a one-way directional message. It's pure propaganda.
Yeah.
So here's what I tell everybody. You get a mailer, you put it right in the trash.
Yep.
Right in the... Don't even look at it. Well, recycle it, actually. You should recycle it.
Put it in the recycling, yeah. Or you could put it in a fireplace. You could do that.
There you go,
You could use it as kindling.
Burn it up. Because, they will propagandize you left and right. Everything on those mailers is suspect. Mm-hmm. Everything is suspect. So that's why I don't do mailers, A.
Yeah. B. I mean, bro, come on. You're at my podcast. You're showing up. That's a different story, man.
B, what I do, I knock on doors.
Yeah.
I do text banking.
That's old school, but that's old school the right way.
Right. I do text banking and phone banking. Mm-hmm. And this is key. I don't just send messages with hit stop to reply if you don't want to... I actually text people directly, and they're able to respond back.
Mm-hmm.
I have
a team. And I've received those texts, man.
You've got them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, people want to be heard. So if you send somebody a text, or if I call you on the phone, and I say, please vote for me, and someone says, why? I got to be able to respond.
Right.
And I have a response. I have policy after policy. I have success after success that I've actually done in Burbank that I want to bring countywide that I can run on and I can tell people about. And so when they hear about me, they get enthused.
Mm-hmm.
My opponent in this race, the incumbent Republican supervisor, takes every single bad dollar you can imagine.
Mm.
Fossil fuel money. Police money, landlord money, developer money, health insurance lobbyists. You name it. You name it, and she's got that cash. And this is all stuff you can look for on the internet, opensecrets.org.
Just use the Googles, guys.
The Google is your friend.
Google is your friend.
And it's incredible how much money she has raised. It's just incredible. And she's the only woman on the ballot who's running for this seat. And so the average voter, when they walk in and they see a woman's name.
Right.
And they see incumbent Los Angeles County supervisor, they think, Los Angeles County is a very blue area. And it is. It's very blue.
Right. They just assume.
They assume she's a Democrat. And so they vote for her. And I'm like, people, do a little bit of research. Just type in the name once on your phone.
Right.
And you will see all of her Republican bona fides.
Mm.
But people don't do that. They just assume. They think,
and especially in local politics, they don't. And that's part of why, you're a perfect guest to have before Super Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Because people don't realize that the people on your local, your local ballots are your next governors and your next county supervisors and your next presidents.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you give these people a platform for their stupidity, they've got it.
Yeah.
And it's people like you that are really doing the hard work that are you know, representing us.
Yeah.
I mean, and straight up, I feel like you are one of the first politicians that actually and fully, like, you're a comedian and an actor and you're in the SAG after and you live in Burbank and all these, you know what I'm saying? Like, you really do represent, because you can empathize with my experience.
Yeah. And I do want to push back on something you just said. It's not stupidity.
Okay.
These people are very clever.
No, I feel you.
They know exactly what they're doing. They know who their donors are.
Mm.
It's the billionaire class. It's the corporations. It's the people who are the right-wing fascists who want more guns on our streets,
mm-hmm.
who don't want protections for women,
right?
Who don't want minorities and immigrants coming to their...
They've been playing this game for a minute, and you're right. You are right. I correct myself. Yeah. They're not stupid. In fact, they're... I'll just say it. It's kind of evil.
Yeah. It's nefarious.
Yeah.
It is absolutely nefarious. And they couch it in all of these very liberal talking points, like, hey, we're going to stand up to the NRA and we're going to stand up to Trump and all of these. And I'm like, wait, but didn't your brother donate like millions of dollars to the pro-Trump campaign? Oh, they don't mention that on the mailer, do they? It's ridiculous. Mm. It's ridiculous.
All right.
So biggest change between the biggest difference, rather, and we're going to change the seat when we get in there.
That's
biggest difference between me and the current office holder is the party, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Republican and I'm a Democrat. But more importantly, the kind of Democrat that I am and the kind of Republican that she is. She is a very pro-corporate, pro-billionaire type of Republican. There are some Republicans who are more on the libertarian side.
Sure.
Of like, let's push back against the system. Let's be a little, not, you know, Donald Trump talks that way, but we know who he
is. He's trying to sell you golden sneakers for $400.
Yeah.
Oh my God, those are the ugliest sneakers I've ever had, ever seen in my life. Anyway.
They'll give you bone spurs if you wear them.
That's a good one. writes jokes too, guys.
But for me, I'm a different kind of Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take corporate money, and a lot of Democrats do. They preach, you know, Black Lives Matters and trans rights, and yet they'll take money from the health insurance corporations to block health care for trans people. They'll take money from police unions to block police reform.
Mm.
And that is the biggest problem we see in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And so I don't do that. I don't take any corporate money. I don't take any police association money. I don't take any fossil fuel money. I'm a different kind of Democrat. I'm much more in line with Bernie Sanders and AOC. And, you know, like when I was born, Jimmy Carter was president, right? He had 3 days left in his term, and I'm so glad I got to be born in a Jimmy Carter term.
You know, I was born in 74, and I was 6 years old when he was in office. And I remember Jimmy Carter because I was like, yo, you have me on putting solar panels on the White House.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Like, because I was into that. When I was six, I was into solar because I'm like, yo, this is how I'm going to fly in space like Han Solo. I'm going to get solar panels on my spaceship and I'm going to power my spaceship
Absolutely.
To the sun.
And what happened to the solar panels?
Ronald Reagan took them off right as soon as he got elected.
He ripped them down.
And
is that, if that is not the most indicative thing that
I will
Reagan
say this.
Did.
I mean, can you imagine the what if? If Yitta just left those solar panels on the White House as an example of what we could have done with the future in 1980, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 1980, what we could have done. Al Gore probably never would have had an inconvenient truth if we'd have done solar panels back then.
Oh, yeah.
That's how visionary Jimmy Carter was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was a Carter Democrat when I was 6 years old. That's how long I've been a Democrat. That's real.
See, I became a Democrat in 1988. Just like every other Greek in this country,
when Michael Dukakis
got the nomination.
See, and that's the other thing, man. Representation.
Yeah.
Representation matters. Like, remind me, the lady, she's running for, what seat, the Filipino lady in L.A.? She's,
oh, CD14, Isabel Jurado.
There you go.
Oh, we love Isabel.
Because I was a part, I did some comedy fundraisers online because Stephen Raga is one of the first Filipino Americans elected to office in New York, in New York City. And so I'm really a part of that. And then you got our boy Rob Bonta as Attorney General.
Who's
contemplating what he's contemplating. I'm not going to, you know, put anything out there, but at the same time, I'm really excited.
You know, he grew up in this area.
Yeah.
This is where he's from.
I've been able to interview him a couple times, and I haven't been able to meet him in person yet, but I'm looking forward to meeting him in person.
Let's get him on the podcast. Well,
I'm going to. I'd really love to because, I mean, between him and Ms. Arata and all the different, you know, Filipinos in office, that's part of it, man. Representation and the empowerment of representation and seeing seeing people like who look like you,
yeah,
doing something that you want to do, it just gives you an example to say, yo, I could do that too.
Right. Right.
You know?
So if you live in East LA, look up Isabel, get out there and vote. She needs your support. If she makes the runoff, because her runoff will be in November as well.
Okay.
Let's get her on the podcast.
Bro.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I'll get her on the podcast. I want to get her on the podcast anyway, because again, your story and why you got on. You're the class of, I wouldn't have, that's inside baseball stuff. I didn't know there was a class of 2016 of politicians that were all inspired by Donald Trump, because I was the same way.
AOC. Man.
AOC. Yeah, yep. No, I knew that there were people that got to elected office because of Donald Trump, but I didn't realize that the inside baseball of y'all refer to yourself as the class of 2016. That is really, that's really awesome and admirable, because it's almost a badge of honor to be like, I was the first one to step forward and be, I'm about to fight this dude because.
My campaign manager founded Indivisible Northridge.
That's awesome.
After Donald Trump won. Mm. She said, this is what I'm going to do. And so the two of us, we talk about it all the time. We talk about what we did before 2016. We're just regular people, man, living our lives, trying to make it in our own career.
Right.
And she did media and advertising, and I did comedy and jokes, and we came together and we're doing this race, and, you know, we have a message.
Yeah.
And she's really great.
I feel it, man. I feel it. I feel like, yo, I like, here's a, yo, an actor turned politician from California who's running the ranks up to California. Who knows, y'all? I might be interviewing the next president in like 12 years, bro. You don't even know. I'm going to put that out there.
I call myself.
You could be the progressive Ronald Reagan.
Yes, yes. The opposite Ronald Reagan.
You're the anti-Reagan.
Yeah, I'm the anti-Reagan. There you go. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. We'll see what happens. It's been tough. You know, I tell people all the time that the struggles I had before I decided to run for office is what makes my policies so profound.
Mm-hmm.
When I was homeless, when I dropped out of college, when I had to deal with a bankruptcy, when I got arrested and thrown into county lockup,
mm-hmm.
when I was a survivor of domestic violence.
Yeah.
Like all of those things.
You also, you're open about your autism.
I was diagnosed autistic about 6 months before I became mayor, and I became the first diagnosed autistic mayor in the United States.
That's awesome.
So I've been dealing with, you know, that my whole life.
Right.
My son has a diagnosis as well. So I go through the school district. I see the IEPs, all the special education failures that we have in this country. And I work with people on it and I advocate for it. I've been active in disability rights for many years now. And all of that struggle, and I use the word struggle for its real purpose. It's not just, oh, I had a tough time. I was bullied as a kid. I mean, technically, I was very much bullied as a kid. But that's not, when we talk about struggle, we're talking about a real systemic problem of not letting people climb that social ladder. Mm. Like, there are rungs missing, my friend.
Yep.
So that kind of struggle is real. And when I talk about the policies I want to enact, I have folks tell me all the time, they say, I've never voted before.
Mm-hmm.
Or I stopped voting years ago when the Democratic Party pissed me off.
A lot of my homies are like that.
Right? I'll never vote again. Every politician is corrupt. And I spent 5 minutes with them and say, I want to do X, Y, and Z. And they look at me and say, wait, why? And I go, because of this, this, and this. Here's my story, and here's what I want to do, and here's how it's going to affect you.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, I'm going to show up, and I'm going to vote just for you. I'm going to skip the rest of the ballot.
And just click your...
Just click... I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I know they're not going to do... They're going to vote.
Of course, for, of course. Know. They're going to participate.
They're going to participate. Yeah. But if I'm the catalyst, if I'm the one who can get people to show up to the polls,
mm-hmm.
then so be it. This seat that I'm running for,
mm-hmm.
LA County, District 5, has 5 million Angelenos in it.
Mm.
I'm sorry. District 5 has 2 million. LA County has 10 million. Let's be real. I'm sorry. There's a 10... Okay, these numbers are staggering.
It's staggering because...
Let's back it up a bit.
Because you represent more people than the senator of Montana.
Right, right. LA County is the largest county in the country. Even New York is split up into five counties. They call them five boroughs.
Right.
Even that is split up.
Right.
LA County.
Shout out to Steven Raga in Queens.
There you go. So you got 10 million people in LA County. There's five districts. Each district represents 2 million people. Of those 2 million, there's 1.5 million registered voters, right? These are bigger than most states.
Yeah.
Most states. So I'll have more direct influence on people's lives than the average governor in
exactly.
this country.
People don't realize that's the thing, man. And I wanted to push back on one thing where you said that you got into all this because of Trump. Because you mentioned that you had a son. And you have kids. So yeah, is it just a son or do you have any other? Yeah.
Well, okay. So I guess I'll clarify. I had been doing political stuff for a while. So we talked about Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. My political hero is Lewis Black.
Oh, he's so good.
That if I could be Lewis Black.
Oh, he's
like,
so good.
That's my jam.
I'm cool if I got to wait, you know, because Lewis Black didn't really hit it until he was, you know, kind of older.
Yeah.
And
oh,
and,
yeah.
And you know, I'm down for Lewis Black is,
yeah.
I mean, if there was a church where Lewis Black was the Pope, I would be a member of that church. For
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lewis Black is that's the oh yeah. my God. Bow down to Lewis Black.
Love me some Lewis Black.
I love me some Lewis Black for sure.
So he's angry and he made it funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd always been, you know, into politics.
Sure.
And I'd been doing some stuff with disability rights and other stuff. So I wasn't a novice. But I had never had any intention of running for office myself.
Right.
Or getting involved in electoral politics, right? The actual action of getting people to vote for a specific candidate.
Sure.
When Trump won, I decided, okay, if that buffoon can do it, anybody can do it.
Right.
And that was the impetus. I'm like, if that guy can win, literally anybody could... Run for office.
Yes, but you have kids. Yeah. And I have kids. My kids are the reason I do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that I do, I want to make a better future for them.
Yeah.
And I know that that's the same for you because I know that that's something that as fathers that if you're a good dad, that's all you want for your kids is a better future for them.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're making that better future for your kids and my kids.
I'm trying.
In the place where we live. Yeah. Yo, and I really respect you and I just want to thank you for being a part of this and being a part of my podcast and making this such a special, you know, pre-election edition because you're helping people make a decision that's going to really affect their lives and in intangible, tangible ways.
I'm the only person running for this county supervisor seat that has kids in school. When I ran for Burbank City Council, I was the only ever in history Burbank City Council candidate that was endorsed by the Burbank Teachers Union. Mm. Teachers Union typically only endorses school board candidates.
Yeah.
But my platform was so all-encompassing, it included helping out the school district and helping them with their issues as well. And so I got an endorsement from the Teachers Union as a city council candidate. And most people don't realize this. School board, city council, separate government bodies. Completely separate funding, separate votes, everything. So the teachers decided, you know what? We're going to cross the line and we're going to go over there and we're going to endorse this guy. All of that stuff that you talk about being a dad and trying to do better for your kids, it informs every single thing that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hugely important. I mean, I have a bunch of educators who are supporting me in this race. And I'm not running for a school board seat.
Mm-hmm.
But they know that by getting me in that office, I'll have the ability, I'll have the power, I'll have the influence and the voice to really affect change at the local level.
Yeah.
I'd be representing 2 million people and over a dozen school districts in that district. So I'm just trying to lift everybody up. I'm trying to do the right thing by everybody, working families, homeless, people suffering from mental illness, people dealing with drugs and coming out of incarceration and just like the toughest things you could possibly imagine. College kids who are taking full course loads and living in their car on the street because they can't afford housing.
Mm.
Like that is real stuff.
Yeah, it's real.
And, you know, for me, if I can do my part, if I can get this seat and actually change the course that we're going and buck the status quo, you know, I'm all for it. And I'm campaigning every single day. I'm knocking doors. You can check out my website, ConstantAnthony.com. You can sign up to phone bank anywhere in the country. Anywhere in the country, you can
log in. So if you're listening to this in Chicago, if you're listening to this in Michigan, if you're listening to this in New York, if you listen anywhere in the country and you like what you heard, phone bank for this dude, text for this dude, because these are the people that are going to change our future. These local politicians that are willing to give up their lives and give up their directions and change the whole direction of their lives to help represent us and give us a voice in local politics. So, Constantine Anthony, thank you so much for being a guest on Miscellaneous and Brown. Good luck on Tuesday, because I know you're going to get it. Yeah, I mean, you're too dang good to not get it.
Thank you.
So, I really appreciate you being a guest, and I'm just come back after you win.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much.